you have a mission and you have a responsibility that comes with being named the Poet Laureate. So I've taken my mission, and I, you know, my mission looks very, very different than some of the other Poet Laureates, but I believe the word ambassadorship itself translates into service and translates into mobility and moving around and having a presence.
Hello and welcome to Here's to Life with Tori Reid, presented by Victory and Noble, a storytelling company with executive producer Patrick Howell. Here's to Life with Tori Reid was brought to you in part by...
We have all been through incredible changes since 2020. In fact, more people are committed to living their best lives than ever before. At Here's to Life with Tori Reid, we are staying healthy and hydrated throughout this episode, courtesy of our premier partners at Vivra Water, a sustainable solutions company who has been leading the charge for nearly 40 years for a kinder, smarter, and lighter planet. With the most reliable, highest performing, and eye-catchingly stylish water dispensing equipment available, they specialize in advanced water filtration, chilling, and carbonation at the touch of a button or pull of a handle. Vivra Water is precisely the kind of life choice Here's to Life's leading icons, culture makers, and outliers are making as we all try to lead our very best lives. Sustainable water, making the world responsible and healthier. One conversation, one pour at a time. Go to vivrawater.com, vivreauwater.com for more information. Jackie Shelton Green is an American poet and the Poet Laureate of North Carolina. She uses poetry as medicine for the soul, and she is beloved by the North Piedmont and North Carolina communities she has devotedly served for decades. Governor Roy Cooper stated that Jackie Shelton Green brings a deep appreciation of their state's diverse communities to her role as an ambassador of North Carolina literature. Her appointment is a wonderful new chapter in North Carolina's rich literary history. To hear her read her poems, We Are the Messengers, or I Know the Grandmother One Had Hands, is to listen to a healer use language artfully and a spirit lift us all up with her own kaleidoscope wings. She is a social activist, and her accolades are long, but she is the most concerned with helping people get better, be better, and love our best. You have led a life as a poet, storyteller, teacher, activist, one who inspires, challenges, and who gives. You're known as a poet for the people. You're strong, gracious, generous, not pretentious, and very authentic. You care about how people feel about their lives. You wonder if they're healing, and you're creating opportunities for other poets. I'd like to begin with a photo that I saw of you that I love, and that's the photo of you being crowned by the governor, Governor Cooper, in 2018 as the first African American to be appointed as the North Carolina Poet Laureate. You're also the third woman to hold that title. What did that moment mean to you?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for your wonderful, very kind, very generous, and compassionate way of embracing me and embracing the work that I do and the life that I really try to lead every day. That moment, I was trying not to cry. I was trying not to do that stupid cry, that ugly cry. So that was the Capitol building of North Carolina. And that was a room where for centuries, you know, there are histories of people who look like me who were not allowed in those spaces, especially that room. And what you can't see is there are people in the balcony, which wrapped around the huge rotunda of this building. And there were people all around me. And I remember when I walked in, the people were cheering, and it felt like being in a football stadium. I mean, it was just thunderous. And I was having an out-of-body experience, thinking, wow, these are my people. And these people came for me. These people came to celebrate me. And, you know, and I sat down, I'm looking up, and there was my godson who'd flown in from New York. I had no idea he was there. There was a woman that I gone to prep school with 1,000 years ago. And just as the program was opening, she and her husband walked in, and I'm like, EJ? You know, this is a woman I'd not seen in 40 some years. And it was a moment. It was a grand moment. It was also a very humbling moment. And there was a part of me that was terrified. It was like, oh, snap. Like, now there is much required of me, you know?
Right.
You know what I mean? It was like, oh, no. You know, this is real.
Yes.
This is not just like a new letter attached to your name or a new status. But it was like, because I believe in doing the work as the ambassador of literature, of the literary arts for the state. I take that word ambassador very, very seriously. So I'm standing there thinking about, oh, we have 100 counties in North Carolina, and I wonder what this is going to look like. But yeah, it is a moment that is recorded, that's embedded in my psyche, in my spirit. I can still feel, hear the energy of the people who came to hold me. And
yes,
I mean, teachers that taught me 1,000 years ago, my high school guidance counselor, so many people, my colleagues from Duke, friends that go back forever, all of my family, you know, including our then, Fiona is 4 now, so that was 2019. So she was a little egg then. And yeah, just my mom, my 105-year-old mom being there to witness this.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's a blessing.
And I couldn't look at her because I had to like not focus on my mom because I knew I was going to burst into tears.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a long way of saying it was simply divine.
You've been described as North Carolina poetry's Billie Holiday. And I love that. You've also received the highest honor that a state can bestow, and that's North Carolina's Award for Literature. Some people may not know what a poet laureate is or does.
Certainly.
Share what it is and what a typical day looks like for you.
The Poet Laureate is really our mission of the Poet Laureate for the state of North Carolina is to be an ambassador of the literary arts, to expand, excite communities around the state. North Carolina, some parts of it are very rural, are very agrarian, are very poor, very low wealth communities where there is no arts education program or it's very minimal. So I have enjoyed traveling the state of North Carolina from the mountains to the coast, doing residencies in public schools, private schools, at universities. I mean, everything from kindergarten to nursing homes. I'm at a senior retirement center. You know, in the next week, I'm at a juvenile detention center. So it's been just really fabulous, the diversity of one geography and the audiences that I'm interfacing with. And it was my intention to really be mindful and intentional to reach those isolated, rural, far away communities where nobody has ever heard of a poet laureate. Nobody knows what a poet laureate is. And nobody cares what a poet laureate is. But it's also been fun. I remember traveling several hours away to a town I'd never been to. And there was a Walmart across from the hotel. And we ran into the Walmart to get something. And this woman walked up to me and she said, "You're that poet thing, right?" And I was like, "Thing?" And she said, "Yeah, we read about you in the paper. You came to our town. You're here to do something." And I said, "Well, yes." I said, "I'm having a workshop tomorrow at the library. And I'll be doing a public reading tomorrow night." And so I stood there over her groceries and explained to her what a poet laureate was. And she came.
Nice.
She said, "Well, I never heard of this thing, but we read about you and it sounded so interesting." It's really been a blessing, and especially for me to be focused on young writers of color, young writers, period. But yes, with a focus on young writers of color, and broadening how we're defining of color. I was away in a very small, when I say small, very rural populated part of the state. And I installed the first high school poet laureates. So this next tenure as a poet laureate, my mission is to create high school poet laureates in our 100 counties. And that's an initiative that will extend far when I'm not the poet laureate. But the Department of Cultural Resources here is like, okay, you want to take this on. So that's what I want my legacy to be. And not just in name, but like we've worked with these young people and explained them, you have a mission and you have a responsibility that comes with being named the poet laureate. So I've taken my mission, you know, my mission looks very, very different than some of the other poet laureates, but I believe the word ambassadorship itself translates into service and translates into mobility and moving around and having a presence. I've really worked hard to increase the viability and increase the visibility of the laureateship in North Carolina.
Sometimes you've referred to poetry as work that is not necessarily art, but as spirit work. And I'd like to talk about spirit work. You've said, success based upon hallowed standards is not something I aspire to or want to participate in. Poetry is about so much more. It is about the work we do here on the planet. It's about crafting quality work and saving lives and elevating lives that you just spoke about. It's about the spirit.
The literary arts has really given me a powerful lens for witness and for what it means to bear witness and to be able to witness how poetry, how stories change people's lives. I've worked for many, many years with people on death row, with dispossessed children. I mean, I've worked in school systems where I've said, I want the badasses. Like, I want them. I want the boys who bring the guns to school. And they were like, we don't think this is a good idea. I was like, no. I mean, I remember many years ago requesting my county, the high school, to give me like all the boys that had been expelled for fighting or bringing guns to school for whatever. And I said, give me the basement of this building, this human service building. I said, there's nothing that happens downstairs. It's just like empty rooms. And I said, we're going to do a weekend retreat there. And they were like, oh, no, you're not. You can't be with those boys for, you're talking about spending a night with them? And I'm like, yeah. I was like, you know, they can bring their sleeping bags. I'll order pizza Friday night. All the Saturday, we'll do some writing. And they said, well, you can do it, but you have to have safety resource officers with you. And I said, they can come, but they cannot bear arms. So they can be with us and they have to participate. They will not be there as guards standing by the door or looking at these boys judging. I said, they will come and they will be on the same level. They will strip themselves of their titles. And we had like three volunteers. And I remember it was so powerful for those gentlemen themselves because they were not far moved from the lives that these kids had come through, how they were raised, the communities they came out of. And here were young men who, I remember touching a young man on his shoulder and he was like, don't touch me. Don't ever touch me. And I said, I am so sorry. I said, you know what? I said, I did not have your permission to touch you. I said, but what you just said was so beautiful and so eloquent. I said, I'm so sorry, but you're right. By the time we left, he was the hugger. He wanted to hug everybody. And if nothing else happened that weekend, he was able to dispel some of his anger into an art form. You know, I mean, listening to their stories and them telling me, well, yeah, we get in a lot of trouble, mainly because no one listens to us. No one creates a safe space for us to tell our perspective. We're labeled. I was in trouble 6 months ago, so yeah, you did this. I wasn't even there, but I just got expelled because I'm a troublemaker. So witnessing comes from the spirit. And I think it's a privilege that the university gives us to be able to witness someone else's sorrow, joy, you know, their pain, their celebrations. It's an honor. And inside of that is how we understand the power of vulnerability.
Yes.
You know, that when I'm doing work with people, I've stripped myself of all titles. I'm not the poet laureate. I'm not the teaching writer. I'm not my resume, but I'm here with you. My humanity is here beside your humanity. I'm not up here and you're down here, but we're here.
Yes.
So for me, that is spirit work. I believe that creativity is medicine. And the more that we can help people understand, and you know, my art form is writing, the more we can help people understand that writing is such a powerful instrument or implement or tool to do the deep digging. You know, many people, a lot of athletes, they're frustrated or they're stressful. They go and they pound a basketball for 8 hours, or they turn to sports, or an artist who goes and paints on canvas for 6 hours, or a musician who goes and sings for 2 hours, or a dancer who goes and to the dance studio. But there's the paper and there's the pen. And that's a serious dig for healing. And I know it because I've watched it. I've watched lives transform through writing, from women who are survivors of incest, not just women, but groups of people I've worked with who are survivors of incest or domestic violence or genocide or different traumas, to witness how they use writing to write through it. And I call it, you know, like write for your life. You know, you can dream yourself golden. You can dream yourself awake through creativity. So that's what I mean by spirit work. And sometimes when I'm doing my sister write retreats with women writers or with people, there is something else going on. Like I'm real clear. It's not me. I'm just a conduit. My ego is somewhere else. My intellect is somewhere else. It's not necessary. And I think that when you are grounded in your selfhood, when you're grounded in allowing spirit to move through you, when you're grounded with just being able to know what spirit is, that it can come and have its way. And that happens quite a lot when we gather to do the writing work.
And I can imagine that's what keeps your spirit alive.
It is.
Is doing that work, connecting, being compassionate, and being the active listener to everyone you encounter.
And just listening to people change their language. I mean, I remember last Sunday I did a retreat, a writing retreat with 9 women. And these women started off saying things, they started off talking about themselves negatively. I'm not creative. I'm not this. And I was like, didn't I just hear that you change your hairstyle every week? That's creative.
That's right.
And just getting them to think about the language that they use and how, like I said, you know, making a salad is creativity. How we arrange our homes, how we decorate is creativity. How we dress, how we show up, representation, it's all creativity. And just like getting out of this very Eurocentric space of thinking of art has to be in a museum. Or only great poets are those who are celebrated. Like I could care less about greatness. It's about helping people where they are. Helping people where they are. And not holding up. I honor all the work of everybody. But I think that we live in a culture that we're blinded by the glitter and the flashing, the names.
Yes. The celebrity,
the whole celebritydom. I know enough celebrities who are fabulous and some who are very shallow and they are celebrities because they protect themselves that way.
Right.
Many, many, many. And I see it happening even in little small town celebritydom. You know what I mean? It's like you become inaccessible. And people need the arts and people need new modalities for finding themselves and for helping themselves to bring medicine and healing, because we're a wounded society. We're a very wounded culture.
Deeply.
And the celebrities are not going to be there in the community. Like, yeah, you may see so-and-so who flew in from New York or somewhere at the festival, but you can't call her next week. She's not going to come speak to your eighth grade class next month.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So,
oh, yes.
It's about how we create access to people who are doing the work and are willing to be available. And that's in no way, shape, form, or fashion slamming people who are on it.
Absolutely.
Who, like, I was like, I'm not on that level yet. But I know that if I ever were in some spaces, that I would still want to be able to be accessible.
Yes.
Or create programming, mm-hmm. trainings, mentorships. Because, you know, we were talking last night about leadership. I've always believed that the core value or measurement of a good leader is not how fabulous you are, but how many people you clone just like you. How many people are you giving? How many people have I worked with that can carry my life legacy forward? I mean, there are sisters who would say, you know what? I've been to enough of her workshops. I've worked with her. She's mentored me. We got this.
The work does
not die. So that's good leadership. Leaders who truly understand power know that more power comes to you. The more you give away, it's like a cathedral of giving. The more you give away, the more comes back to you.
You once said that art is one way for people to examine, to dismantle, to take apart, to rip open the seams and find where the truth will set them free. And of course, I read that and I instantly fell in love with that thought, that quote. Do you feel that you're free?
Oh, very much so. The thing that I keep with me all the time is something that James Baldwin saying about the artist's job is to disrupt, to insist. And I'm insistent. I'm very disruptive. But doing that, not to destroy the fabric, you know what I mean? Not to destroy people or systems, but to examine how I fit inside of that and become a catalyst.
Yes.
And I think about that all the time. He also said that the writer should write about the times that they live in.
Yes.
And that's what keeps me free. That's what keeps me free is having the audacity. You know, I live in the South. I live inside of the Confederacy that is still very much a Confederacy. But to have the audacity to call myself the other daughter of the Confederacy. You know, this Confederacy does not only belong to certain people.
That's right.
There were African-American troops, Civil War troops. So these Confederate battlefields all over the country, I mean, you know, the southern part of the country, they have black blood. There's black blood in that soil. So that flag is mine too.
That's
And some people have made the flag, I say they've made her a whore. The flag is a historical, it's a primary document. It's a sword. It's a primary document. And it should be in a museum. And it should be commemorated as a historical document instead of how people have picked it up and weaponized it, racialized it, institutionalized it to be so different than what it really was. Yeah, I will always be free inside of my art. And if I'm free there, then that definitely comes through the way I live my life.
I believe the spirit of Jackie Shelton Green is represented best by a project she created, Sisterite. That program has been about housewives, professionals, post office workers, gardeners, poets, and VIPs alike, connecting to a source deep within and being able to pull as much of their light into the light of day through poetry. In New Age jargon, that's a light harvester. In the language of the world, she is a healer, no different than a doctor, a nurse, a psychologist. Only know this, Jackie is real. And that is what is of most importance to her, even as she evolves and grows, that she helps people care better, that she does not get involved in another superficial layer. She's about the blessing of being authentic. And this quality is the sing-song of her melodic, airy voice. It is in the authority with which she insists we love better. Her work is spirit work, and her craft is words, poems, activism, and learning. The long list of accolades that is for us to honor her.
Thank you for listening to Here's to Life with Tori Reed, executive produced by Patrick Howell. We hope you've enjoyed today's show. Here's to Life with Tori Reed was brought to you in part by
the Hilton Sacramento Art and West in Sacramento, California, is committed to creating a safe and relaxing experience, including delivery of a clean stay from check-in to check-out. Located a couple of exits from downtown Sacramento and California's capital, our hotel provides a world-class stay, amenities, and rooms at the center of the California experience. California is a world-class economy with visionaries, doers, and dream catchers at its heart. Our mission, as with Here's to Life and Getting Deals Done, is the highest possible expression of excellence, business moxie, humanity, and client care. As the world moves at a fast and sometimes hectic pace, we will provide you with a peace of mind. The Hilton Sacramento Art and West is here to make your experience a better one. We look forward to receiving you. I am Ginger Levert, Director of Sales and Marketing at the Hilton Sacramento Art and West. Our focus is on the customer experience and a pristine excellence. When you travel to Sacramento, stay with us and I guarantee your peace of mind.
Check back with our page, herestolifeeveryday.com, for new episodes. And if you like this show, don't forget to hit subscribe and be sure to leave a comment, rate, or review wherever you're listening. And share it if you can. So, here's to life, today and every day. So long for now.